Go ahead.
I'm a son of immigrant parents. I was born in Winnipeg in 1921. I joined the Army because I felt that I should do something to fight fascism.
You're an anti-fascist.
I'm an anti-fascist, and I felt that that the best thing that I could do was to be to do something to fight for against fascism.
Mm-hmm. And what?
And I volunteered in the Army. And I was 19 years old or something like that.
What education did you
have? I was expelled from school because I wouldn't go for the crap that the school was teaching me at the time, which was was a British education, it expressed many prejudices against my people. And against the people who were oppressed during the long years of the Depression. And I rebelled against the school. I was expelled from the school.
Tell me, did your father and mother have a hard time making a living?
My father had a hell of a time to make a living. But he was an anti-fascist. He hated fascism, and he hated the those that oppressed the workers, and he saw fascism as the greatest oppression, the greatest oppressive force in the world at that time, Nazism and fascism. And I joined idealistically into the Army, and I found that in the Army I was oppressed. And when I was a prisoner of war, I was oppressed by the Imperial Japanese Army as well as the Imperial Canadian Army, especially its officers. And when I came back from overseas, I expected that it would be different here, but I soon found that it was the same thing. I became active in workers' organizations, as well as the trade union movement. And I was active for some time working in the trade unions, and I became the general chairman of the Boilermakers. I was expelled from the Boilermakers for fighting for the rank and file against the autocratic leadership of the trade union movement. And since then, I have lived a good life. I've never betrayed my class and my kind, but the experience in a prisoner of war camp was an experience to educate me. It was an educational process for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real educational process because it drew the lines for me.
Mm-hmm.
It drew the lines on what society was like at home. Because there was a sharp line between the privileges of the officers and the starvation of the rank and file. And when I came home, I knew what society was like. And so I dedicated myself, as I did when I joined the Army, I dedicated myself to fighting for the oppressed people. And today Canada is oppressed by its oppressors, the Trudeau government, and the people of the exploiting classes and the sellouts of this country to U.S., to the United States. And I'm still fighting. I still will continue to fight until I die against this oppression. But it's been a whole life of struggle for my father, who was seriously oppressed because he was an Italian immigrant. And he died feeling that oppression. As a matter of fact, the day before he died, he called me and he said to me, he says, "You and I are of that breed that we can't take oppression."
Mm-hmm. You've got too much of an individual mind.
Yeah.
Were you hurt in a battle or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was hurt.
You were injured, eh?
Yes, I was injured.
Did you heal? Did you get better from
it? Yeah, I was very sick during many times during the time that I was prisoner of war. I had much disease. And I was not very well treated by both our own people, who didn't seem to understand. You see, we at the time didn't seem to understand the value of comradeship. Most of the people were psychologically raised up in a class society. And so they expressed all the fascist thinking, the elitist thinking, that comes out of being born in and being raised in a class society. And so the officers lived better while the men starved. The officers oppressed. I can tell you a particular incident. When I was a prisoner of war, and the officers from time to time raided the kits or the clothing kits of the men. One time, an officer, his name was White, examined my kit and said that I had a pair of officer's shorts, and put me under arrest for stealing these shorts from the officer. Short pants, that is, you know. So I said that they weren't officer shorts, and that I would not turn them over to him or his officers, and he put me under arrest. And he had me go before the CO. The CO called me a jackal, a thief, a low-down skunk, all the dirtiest names he could lay his tongue to. And then I just happened to see that the sergeant had the same kind of shorts on. And I said to him, "Sir, can I ask a question?" And he says, "Yes." I says, "Is it permissible for NCOs to wear officers' clothing?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, you're charging me for having in my possession the same pants that this sergeant is wearing." And then when it was discovered that they were not officers' clothing, he let me go. But he was mad. He was quite mad that one of us got away. You see? They raided our clothing, they stripped us of all our possessions, and they lived as people do live here, you see. They lived in the prison camp. You see, the prison camp was just a carryover from the kind of society that we live in here, because they wanted their privileges. They were a privileged people, an elite people, you see. So it wasn't any different from fascism. It wasn't any different from Hitler's Nazism. It was the same thing. So we were the same kind of people as the Japanese imperialists were. And so that those that can say now, they can say now, "Oh well, they see things differently," or "they've seen things differently." Well, it depends on how you see life and how much you know about life that you can interpret what you did over there. You see, it took me a long time to understand. I had to go through a hell of a process of education to find out what it was. What was life like? And what does life mean? And a lot of people have forgotten because they suckhole. They're crawlers. They crawl to the system so that they can get a piece of it for themselves. I've never crawled and I don't want any of it. And I don't want any of their handouts, because it's given out in a begrudging fashion. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Did Did you get your pension now?
I got the pension when it was awarded to everyone else. Although I was sick for 2 years, two solid years, I was unable to work, and we lost a lot of property. You see. We lost a lot of property because of my 2 years illness, and we became poor. As a matter of fact, we were fairly well off one time. We became kind of poor, and now I don't want anything, any possessions. I don't want anything in particular, so I feel quite comfortable.
Well, when you say you had property, is this your father's property?
No, I had more than my father's property. I had my own property. But because of 2 years' illness, I lost my job on the railroad, and for a long time I had to make out on my own, and I became poor. Mm-hmm. We became heavily in debt. We became in debt, and...
What type of work are you doing now?
I'm a painter.
Mm-hmm. You work at the university?
I work at the University of Manitoba. Mm-hmm.
How do you like your work?
I don't like the relations there between, but, and I don't particularly like the kind of work that I do, but because I never have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. You see, life is like now for the working classes that you don't make any decisions at all. Mm-hmm. You get up in the morning, that's decided for you. Mm-hmm. And you go to work, and that's decided for you. Mm-hmm. And where you go to work and what you paint is decided for you. Mm-hmm. And the time that you quit or the time that you go for lunch and the coffee breaks are decided for you. Mm-hmm. And when you come home, that's decided for you, and you have no decisions to make at all. So how can you say that you like something that where you have no stake in?
When you were in being treated for illness, were you out at Deer Lodge?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. And you say they cut your pension off for you?
No, they didn't cut my pension off. They didn't give me a pension. Although I was perfectly entitled to a pension, mm-hmm. I was entitled to more of a pension. They refused to give me a pension, but they did after... allow me a war veterans allowance. After that, my father, because my mother died, my father willed to me a very old home that had very little value. I didn't know, but I got a letter from the Veterans Affairs, which they wanted their war veterans allowance back. Mm-hmm. And I had sold the house, you see. I'd sold the house, and right after that, they'd been spying on me all this time without me knowing about it. When I sold it, it was up for sale for a hell of a long time, and no one had contacted me. But the minute I sold it, they were on the phone, and I got a letter from the receiver general that I owed the government of Canada a large sum of money. And so I paid it cash. Mm-hmm. And paid a few debts, and there went the house.
Mm-hmm. Honey, did you try to fight it?
No, I don't try to fight things like that. You know, I think we should fight more in more general terms, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, when you came home from the war, did you expect a better treatment out of
veterans? Well, you see, it's not that I expected much of a better treatment, but I saw a lot of phoniness, you see. There was a lot of phoniness. When I came back from overseas, I wanted to be discharged from the Army. I didn't want any more to do with the Army. You see, I was fed up with the Army, and I wanted to be discharged, but they wouldn't allow me to be discharged. Dr. Crawford said that, he said to me, actually, in the office, he says, we're not going to allow you to be discharged because you're a Hong Kong veteran, and I'm going to see to it that you get proper treatment. See? And he said that to all the Hong Kong veterans. He was going to see to it, and he was going to dedicate his life to seeing to that the Hong Kong veterans were going to be given a good deal. So a little while later, and there would be no discharge, So discharged from the army. But a little while later, Dr. Crawford was given a very good appointment with the government, and we were discharged without a deal. So there's a sellout. Dr. Crawford was a sellout.
Tell me, did you get any sort of bonus or anything for the time you spent in the training camp, any sort of pay there?
Yes, we got something. I don't even remember it. It was given out in such a little fiddly deals that I don't even remember what we got. Sometimes I got $600. Mm-hmm. One time I got $600. I don't even remember what for. I like to forget a lot of things like that, you know. There were peace offs. They were usually used in a great deal of press coverage, you know. Mm-hmm. You got a great deal of print on stuff like that, you know. When the Hong Kong veterans were given a bit of money, all the newspapers across Canada carried this, and the government gained a lot of press with it, and it was used. The Hong Kong veterans were allowed to be used. Matter of fact, we had a president in the Hong Kong Veterans Association who was a communist. And he told me personally that when he was up in Ottawa, Lapointe, who was Minister of Veterans Affairs, had called the Hong Kong veterans who were on the executive of the Hong Kong Veterans Association, called them in, and told them that they would get this and this and that, but they had to see to it that Charles Watson would be kicked off the executive. Had to see to it that they had to get out. And of course, this was all arranged, and they used a little, I don't know who advised these here punks, but they were advised on how to get rid of Charlie, and they got rid of him. And all sorts of things like that were used, and the Hong Kong veterans were used.